This is the Gazer Update for September 3rd, 2017. I am Filippo D'Anolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Reb Victoria.
And this week, yeah, we're starting up in the, I guess, what would be considered the holiday release cycle is officially upon us now.
More or less.
Yeah, well, we got stuff coming out now. You know, the sports games are, well, Madden has come out, so that means basically all of them are going to in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that usually signals the start of everything coming out. Goes all the way from now up until the end of November, and then there's a bit of a lull in December when you'd actually want to buy games, but
yeah.
Yeah, so
everyone's ducking everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all that Call of Duty thing. It comes out in November, and that's where it's going to stay, I guess. But yeah, so we have a few interesting topics to cover this week. Some strange news, I would guess. And then, well, Bethesda being Bethesda. So, yeah, we'll get to that. But before that, we should probably talk a little bit about what we've been doing this week. And, well, a bit of more of the usual for me, you know, Diablo 3, Tekken 7, been that Tekken Bowl DLC came out, so downloaded that. And it is just as ridiculous as you would think it would be. And it's great. It's like probably like one of the most rudimentary bowling games you could get, and I'm totally okay with that. Yeah. So, yeah. As part of the season pass, I guess it's all right. I'm not sure I would pay $15 for it, but yeah, there we go. So there's that. I've also been dodging PSN cam girls because apparently that's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, some of them have found me, and, well, you know, they're very easy to spot because they never change their icons.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, this is something I did not know existed, and now I'm scarred for life.
It's desperation taken to a new level.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it really is. Yeah, so beware of messages you get on PSN.
Yeah.
You never know what is going to be on the other end. Yeah, so that's been my week. How about you, Pat?
Tekken 7, actually played quite a bit of it last night, sticking solidly in the Grandmaster territory with a little bit of Brawler thrown in now, so I'm moving up slowly. We'd probably get over that wall if I just go to the trouble of hooking up the fight stick. But, you know, it's... The gamepad's working for me for the most part at the moment, and you know I otherwise can't be bothered, so it works. Also playing the Last Days of the Dissidia beta.
Yeah,
so good. I am really looking forward to this game. I hope they can get their net code worked out, because if this game releases as it's supposed to, like, as the game that is currently residing in Japanese arcades, they've got something special on their hands, not just from a Square Enix standpoint, but from an esports standpoint.
Yeah.
The 3-on-3 format is brilliant. Yeah. I can't say enough about it. I just wish we could have more characters for the beta, but I can see why they're holding back.
Yeah, I guess they would kind of want to keep some of them for launch.
Yeah.
It would have been nice.
And then Stormblood.
Yeah, and Stormblood, because Final Fantasy XIV is awesome.
It just never gets old.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a shame they don't do like Street Fighter V did for their beta, where they'd rotate characters out. But,
yeah,
you know, given that this is the final days, I don't expect that to happen.
Yeah, maybe if there's another round of betas before January, but even that's kind of a long shot. It'd be nice, because they do have to get their netcode together.
Yeah. I imagine, though, if they're going to be doing esports with this game, chances are the netcode wouldn't be as big of a deal, because it would be local. But still, do you, if you want to have actually have an enjoyable game online, you kind of
got to have the following too.
Yeah. Well, and the fact that Final Fantasy's name is associated with it is going to help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it also means that they can't afford to release a turd.
No.
Which is really what this game would be with bad netcode.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put that out there.
Like, how bad good is it right now?
You remember when I was in college playing DOA 2?
Uh-huh. Oh. yeah, that
it
was...
It can be like that. It Not can. Always, but mm. it goes there.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, that could be a problem. But, yeah, they got a kind of an uphill battle considering what they're trying to do. I mean, DOA is one thing, or one-on-one, or at most two-on-two. Yeah. But, yeah, they're trying to synchronize six streams at once. That's a heavy engineering task. Hopefully they can pull it off.
And they might have to have some kind of connection cut off. Like, you must have an internet connection of this quality in order to even access online.
Yeah. That would kind of suck, but it may be necessary. Or you'd have to have, like, a filter on the client side to go, okay, just don't show me anybody who's not... of that quality.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Otherwise, fantastic game. I can't wait to start playing this with a regular group.
Yeah. And this is due January?
January 20th, I want to say.
So it's not all that far off.
Very, very cool-looking steelbook covers available for pre-orders, and if you buy the... that Ultimate Edition that's out there for $190 at the Square Enix online store, there's a fourth steelbook variant that is exclusive to that.
God damn it, Square is shit.
So how about
they're
you?
Going all out for this release, though.
They think they've got a real hit on their hands here. And, you know, from what I've seen, too. I can definitely see that. So how about you, Chris?
Well, get
Brandon.
It?
Yeah, you're here too. Sorry.
Yeah, so Final Fantasy 14,
Yes.
Yeah, I'm now at the point where I'm going up against Lady Iceheart. And that whole sort of subplot about dealing with, you know, them trying to summon Saint Shiva. And yeah, that's pretty much it right now. I managed to also become a red mage and a samurai. So
two very different disciplines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both equally as fun though. So that's more or less me for Final Fantasy 14. Also, because East 8 is going to be coming out in exactly a little over a week from now.
Good game.
Yeah.
I got my pre-order in.
Yeah. I hate you, Dan Rabbit, and your mother is a whore. But because of that, and since I can't get a hold of it right now, I'm going to just make do with East Arkham Nepishtim. Which is an incredibly fun game that also has arguably the greatest soundtrack in gaming history.
Falcom. It's also the game that sort of formed what Ease would become in the modern era.
Yeah, because I don't know. I'm guessing some of you have played some of the older Ease games.
Yeah.
Yeah, they play really weirdly because... You know, the East games are considered to be like sort of some of the foundation of the modern action RPG genre.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is that the old East games, you don't actually like physically attack.
No, you just sort of run into them and just that sort of happens. I called it combat via slam dancing.
Yeah, and it's really awkward when you first.
It makes sense the more you play it.
Yeah. And all I got to say, though, is that at this point, Adolf, is that his?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. At this point, you would think he would just stay away from boats. Just period.
Just use any other mode of conveyance. Just stay away from ships.
Yeah, and at some point he's just, we're going to come around like East 10 or East 11 at some point, and the first thing you see is him waking up and going, God damn it. It'll literally be the first words he says in the series proper.
Yeah.
Is him going, fuck, not this again.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So yes, Chris, what about you?
So after the last PlayStation flash sale, I picked up a couple of games that were pretty cool. The first is Ironcast, which is kind of a mix of FTL and a little bit of Puzzle Quest. So it takes place in the late 1800s in Britain. There's this great steampunk mech war between Britain and France. And so you're kind of on this, I don't really understand what the point of your journey is. You're sort of trying to survive like 8 rounds worth of missions, I guess. And it's sort of in that style of FTL where it gets progressively harder. You have your health, your HP stays the same between rounds unless you use your money instead of upgrading your mech. You spend it on improving your health. Eventually you'll probably fall. At least the first few times, but then when you get a chance to start a new campaign, you earn some currency that you can spend on new mechs, pilots, or other things to give you a boost on the next run. And the puzzle quest part of it is during the matches, in sort of the same way that FTL is, you're kind of managing all your systems in your ship. This time it's just for your mech, so your two arms or your, which are your attacks. My main ones is like a kind of a rifle gun and an energy gun, as well as your legs, which is just your speed. So if you put more points into that, you will start moving and you'll be harder hit. So there's like a chance of attacks missing you, as well as the other one is just your shield. So to sort of mitigate damage as well. And so you're kind of trying to keep those up and make, it's not necessarily Bejeweled style matches. You're more just, linking together chains of gems that are the same color to add to that sort of pool of, I guess sort of just gem currency used to invest into those things. And so you get 3 rounds of matching gems, which gives you mostly a good chance of refilling your, you know, your attack gems or your defense gems or whatever you need. And so you're just kind of managing all these different systems, which is pretty cool. And the game is definitely got a really cool style to it, as you have these sort of 1800s steampunk mechs that you're piloting, and it's been pretty fun. I got through a whole campaign's worth and haven't got a chance to do a second run through yet, but so far it's been pretty good. The other game I got is called Yonder, the Cloud Catcher Chronicles, which reminds me a lot of Fantasy Life, in that there's, well, minus the combat at least, there's no combat here. Not really much of a way to die other than if you run into a body of water you can't get out of. You just sink into the water and then just respawn a little bit back where you were. So it's very much a game that's all about just picking up resources. You know, wood, sticks, rocks, flowers, food, you can fish. And you're kind of also want to do a bunch of you got a bunch of quests to go along with it, so sort of RPG style quests of, hey, I need, you know, 20 sticks, go get me some sticks for this thing, or and there's a bunch of stuff like that that very much gives me a Fantasy Life kind of vibe, where It's a relaxing game to just play and spend some time in, and a good way to just wind down from day of work or whatever, and listen to podcasts or put some videos on, and sort of just complete some quests. Mm-hmm. And that's been pretty fun. And it's been pretty easy on the trophies as well. A lot of it is just here's a bunch of different quests that you big time quests that you complete and you get trophies for. So just sitting here completing trophies, there's a trophy, there's another trophy, that sort of stuff. They do a pretty good job of just making it fun and relaxing. So that was, I think, like $8, and it just came out like 2 months ago. So it was a pretty good drop. Definitely something people should check out if that's what they're into. And the other game is Everybody's Golf, which I've been playing a bit more of, and still doing pretty well, but I'm still in like the easy tournaments where one of the rounds, they had like a tornado hole where essentially you hit the ball near the hole and it just goes in. There's like a vortex pulling in the ball as it goes nearby, though I didn't really have to get too much help from that. And I finally got the ability to rank up and get the first versus character, which she's really bad, so I beat her in 3 holes, basically. So that was a pretty easy match, but I'm looking forward to playing some more of that.
I haven't played any of those since Hotshots Golf 4. Is it comparable, better, or worse?
I mean, the actual golfing part is mostly the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of everything outside of it that has changed a bit, since it's more of an open world-ish kind of thing, but not really like GTA or anything like that, but you can sort of just run around the course and play around and do things. You can just jump into some of that stuff with just the menus if you want, but you can just sort of run around and have a little fun. There's some places to fish. I still haven't opened that stuff yet. Just like I think it's other people's players that they've made are in the, like, just walk around a little bit. You can go up to them and click on them, and you get the ability to just buy their stuff, essentially, like, buy their character to sort of put in your pool of items as you kind of just try to fill up your options so you can just change your outfit and all that. But you also unlock a bunch of that stuff for completing the various tournaments and ranking up. As one of the cool things they do is every time you do good like drives or putts or various other things, you like rank up, you get like experience for it. So as you rank it up, you can hit your initial drive a little bit farther than you could before, that sort of stuff. So it's sort of like you get better at the things you do in the game. So it's a pretty good way of getting around the way that you just had set characters before. They also have the different types of equipment, though I haven't seen a ton of that yet. That some of that gives you boosts to certain things, but I have not really got a chance to see too much of that yet. I think that's been pretty much it.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, well, I thought you were going to ask when I was playing, but okay, sure. So I've been playing East 8. The embargo lifted early last week, so I can talk about it now. It's not really very far off from what Brandon was talking about in regards to Napishtim. So, yeah, Adol's on a boat again, and some shit happens, and he ends up on a deserted island. So, yeah, good old East. This time around, I don't know how you guys feel, but with the East series, I think it's always been more about its actual combat than it has been about the story. At least that's how I feel. And I feel like East 8 really takes a page out of the Legend of Heroes Trails games, because the style is completely reminiscent of it. Like, you'll see a character, they'll zoom in on them from their leg going all the way up. When you enter a new area, it'll zoom out and give you a look at what it looks like and things like that. And there's a whole lot more dialogue scenes than I'm used to.
They're finding identity.
Yeah, they are.
Trails.
Mm-hmm. And the main thing, it's like Brandon said, like, this was one of the RPGs that really set the tone for what action RPGs could be in the future. And this is quite a solid one here. Like, I would probably say the one action-based RPG that everyone's used to by now is probably the Tales series. This one, I think, has a little bit more depth, mainly because you aren't just relying on different button combinations for your combos, but you're also dodging, you're also blocking. There's a dodging and blocking mechanic that you can use that'll slow down time so you can get more hits in and things like that. And you can actually change your characters on the fly, because each enemy has a certain weakness depending on everyone's attack style. So, for example, you have Adol, who can just use his sword strikes. Then you have other characters who can use their hammers and their guns and whatnot. And it's really all about deciding which character is best for the situation. I've gotten...
There's Dogi, who is the enemy of all masonry.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, Dogi isn't a playable character this time around. He's just there. So the main thing with the main thing with this game is that since you're on a deserted island, everyone's been separated, and you form sort of a community called Castaway Village, where everybody has to do their part in order to get out of the island. So as you explore the island, you're constantly recruiting people to join the island, but they aren't necessarily joining your party. Those are limited to about 4 characters, 3 characters at a time, and yeah, it's pretty solid. Obviously, I'm not going to go too much into the plot. I'll talk about it a little bit some in my review, which probably should be up in the next couple of days. I've reached the point where I can travel a whole lot faster. Most points are warpable by now. And I can go back and forth between the current world and the world in the past. Very solid game so far. A lot of the reviews from other publications are out, and I think they're overrating it a little bit. But the main thing that I would say that sort of holds it back, especially compared to games like Chosen the Sky, for example, is the translation is a little bit too general and generic. I don't think the translators at Nisa really made an attempt to make everybody sound differently, or everybody sound different. It's like the same people are talking every time.
Yeah.
But the voice actors are actually pretty solid in this game, and it's not actually not a complaint of mine, which it usually is. So, yeah.
I've been told that apparently the story in this particular installment is pretty superior to the ones that have come before.
Far superior. This one actually is more plot-based than I would say the previous ones are. Also, there's a lot of good nods to people that have played previous games in the series. You have one character who mentions a ironclad, red-haired character who keeps helping people out in different situations, and that the army is now putting a target out at him. But a lot of solid nods. And you know, this is Falcom like continuing their renaissance. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's nothing bad about that at all.
Mm.
I definitely would pay the full amount for the game when it comes out. And I think you guys will be looking forward to this one.
Over a year now.
I think you'll actually really enjoy this battle system more than the previous games in the series. They really upped their game here. Mm. All right. I've also been playing some. It is saying a lot. It's huge upgrade over what they've done in the past. Then again, I haven't played E7, so I'm not sure about that. All right. So I've also been playing Yakuza Kiwami. I'm near the end on that too, but I've already pretty much gotten a hand of what to expect here. It's pretty much Yakuza with Yakuza Zero's mechanics. So nothing wrong with that at all.
So you played Zero?
I did play Zero.
Cool.
Like I played Zero thinking that would be the best launching point, but I still think Kiwami is a little better in that regard. But Zero does a good job, really improving the game's mechanics.
Well, the reason I like Zero as a jumping on point is because there's stuff going on in the first game that will actually, kind of broadside you if you played Zero first.
Mm, okay.
Whereas, if you played Kiwami or even the original first, it's just kind of the story.
Mm. Gotcha.
Yeah, extra context.
Yeah, solid game. And then Yakuza Kiwami 2 was announced like last week, so
yep.
Yakuza's not going anywhere anytime soon. Yep. Still playing some Sonic Mania. It's one of the games that I keep going back and forth with my Switch. On that note, I've also been playing Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, and I am having a lot of fun with this game. As of right now, I'm unless something happens between now and December, I'm probably going to put it in my top 10 somewhere. I've literally been blown away by this game. It's super addictive. The combat is really easy to understand, but at the same time has that depth that'll challenge you a little bit. And the main challenge comes from the fact that you want to be able to finish each round perfectly. I don't know. I feel like when I have one character die, I really have to do it all over again, kind of like Fire Emblem, even though these characters don't matter. Mm. But, it's a solid title, really colorful, and yeah, they say the word hell in it, and Mario has a gun. So I don't know what Ubisoft did, but, you know, they made attempts to do some shit there. That's pretty crazy.
Okay.
What else have I been doing in my marathon? Oh, yeah, I've been playing some Madden NFL 18. Reviews up on Smashpad. It's pretty much the same game as it was last year, except for the story mode, which is actually superb. A lot of the modern sports games nowadays have been getting their own story modes, mainly with NBA 2K. And NBA 2K caught a lot of flack a few years ago by having Spike Lee as its main director, and that story sucked.
I was going to say, if we're talking about 2K14...
Yeah, I think it was 16.
16.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was not good.
That was totally awkward. I remember getting towards the end when you find out that I'm going to spoil it because it was 2 years ago, that your friend dies, and I literally waited an hour for him to read that fucking letter. I was like, can we just get back to the basketball, please? So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
Long shot.
The 3K14 one happened, and I haven't given 2K my money ever since.
Now, with Long Shot, this one's actually pretty solid because it pretty much does the opposite of whatever the fuck NBA 2K16 did. So first of all, your friend is not an asshole. If anything, your character is the asshole. Because there were a lot of points in the game where, well, first to put a little bit of an understandability here, the game pretty much handles itself the way that the Telltale games do and the Mass Effect games do, where, you know, each decision you make will affect the course of the game later. So for Madden, with every decision you make, it'll affect your draft status. So scouts are watching your every move. Early in the game, you have an opportunity to take a picture in front of the hotel in which you have to check in for the NFL Combine. And all right, I was like, sure, let's go ahead and take a picture. And then the scouts docked me, saying I was on social media too much and I cared more about my, you know, my look rather than my football skills. And yeah, so I ended up not getting drafted, but I had offers from my favorite team, which is the Packers, and I had an offer from the Bears, which my friend signed with. And I was like, cool, I have to choose my favorite team or the team I hate the most. And yeah, that was actually pretty eye-opening, as simple as it was. Hmm. So this is about a four-hour campaign, and honestly, it would be pretty stupid if EA didn't just go ahead and release this as a standalone experience. Like, this is something I would easily pay $25 for. And this is what you're going to get all your value in Madden for. So if you're a football fan, by any virtue, I would go ahead and recommend that, and then the football is extra, because, yeah, it's the same game as last year, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. Lastly, I also picked up Everybody's Golf, but I haven't popped it in yet, and the main reason why I picked this up was because Amazon fucked up on Prime Day and made it $12. So,
Whoops.
Yeah. And yeah, that's largely been it. A lot.
Cool. All right, so let's jump into the shrapnel. We'll start off with our first story. It's litigation again. So, yeah, there's this company called iLife. They make stuff. Right now they seem to be making vacuum cleaner robots of some kind. In 2013, they sued Nintendo over patent infringement, claiming that Nintendo infringed their patent on technology to detect whether someone has fallen down in the Wii and Wii U. I'm not entirely sure how this works, because yeah, it makes no goddamn sense whatsoever. It doesn't seem like it's playing in the same industry. But it was basically against the motion controls in the Wii gamepad and, well, the Wii U, for that matter. And August 31st, a few days ago, court awarded them $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Against Nintendo. Now, granted, wow. Yeah, it's a Nintendo's going to...
a drop out of the Wii war chest.
Yeah, it's not a substantial amount compared to what they were asking for. They were asking for $4 for every single Wii and Wii U unit sold, which would have brought the total up to $144 million. They didn't get that. What's more disconcerting is that this company has actually tried this with other companies. Those, you know, Fitbit and a couple of others, they settled out of court. In this case, against Nintendo, Nintendo decided to defend themselves and lost. That's a bad precedent setter, because now that opens the door for this company and others to look at, hey, what other kind of BS patents do we have, and who can we
sue? Oh, boy.
Does anybody here watch Silicon Valley?
No, I need to get that show.
Oh, my God. Well, season 4, episode 7... it's called the patent troll.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And basically, it's actually really, really common here. You know, there's people mainly in startups who are just trying to, you know, get some money out of every big and small corporation there is. And this is a perfect example of patent trolling.
Yeah,
and yeah, I mean, I life can get a fucking break. Man.
Yeah, so
I mean, there's a reason why this the court was in Texas.
Yeah,
so that's where the majority of these patent troll lawsuits done, because the people they get are tend to be more sympathetic,
yeah,
to the non corporations.
Yeah, this was filed. Remember that this was filed in 2013. So if this case had been filed this year, they wouldn't have been able to cherry pick Texas as the place to litigate it.
True.
So yeah,
especially when the patent sounds like every gyroscope device should be on their list to take to court.
Yeah, pretty much. But because they have this win now, well, they could go after Sony for the move. You know, there's that.
Go after Apple, Google.
Apple for the iPhone, Google.
Microsoft.
Yeah, it's wide open to them if they want to do it. So, patent trolls suck.
Is Rockstar still being sued over that Miss Cleo bullshit?
I don't know. I think that's settled.
Oh, man. It's just totally what a mess.
Yeah,
I'm gonna guess Nintendo's gonna appeal this.
Oh yeah, they've already said yeah they're gonna appeal. So,
well, you know how Nintendo can make that $10 million back?
Yeah,
they can supply demand for the SNES Classic.
Yeah, they could do that. You know,
yes, like, that would be quite nice.
Actually, you know, taking
about $80 they can have.
Yeah. Fucking Nintendo.
Yeah, or even better, make a SNES multi-cart with those 20 games. Charge $100, and here, you can have my money right now.
No, that's not going to happen. You know why that's not going to happen? Because it makes sense, Phil.
Yeah. So, that's sense, logical sense and Nintendo don't go together.
Clearly,
point,
they're not in the business of making sense.
No. Nope.
So, moving on. We got the answer this week to whether Square Enix was going to bring Secret of Mana to the U.S. on the PS4, and the answer is yes. Take my money right now.
Yes.
Just you can have it. Yeah, this looks good. The art style was a little disconcerting to me at first. It kind of grew on me the more I watched it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It looks good.
I too once again long to be fired from cannons and fight evil Santa Claus.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you know which Square Studios handling this?
I have no idea.
This is totally a Tokyo RPG Factory. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Yeah, I don't think.
Well, they're busy working on Lost Sphere.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think this was outsourced.
Same studio that did the. Did the re-release, the anthology on the Switch.
Yeah.
Because it was a while back, the producer said, stay tuned, there's more coming.
Yeah.
So that's... February 15th is the date to circle on your calendar.
Yep. So it's confirmed for both PS4 and PS Vita. Don't know why it's not coming out on the Switch, but yeah.
Suspecting...
Because the collection was the Switch's, that was what they were giving it.
Yeah.
Which, if that finds its way stateside, will still be a good purchase because we've never gotten Seiken Densetsu 3 over here.
Yeah. No, we haven't.
Yeah.
So that would make... That's how they're going to sell it over here, mark my words.
Yeah, given the fact that they're doing it on the PS4 over here, it would be really stupid if they don't just bring that Switch collection over. I would consider it a given. It's just a matter of them announcing it at this point. It's
put a localization team on it for 2 months and you're good. Yeah, maybe not even 2 months.
I'll just get it on Vita. Take that, Sony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've already got it in English, so it's like, what the hell?
Seiken Densetsu 3?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, oh, yeah, the fan translations.
Yeah. Just send them a few bucks and, yeah, good to go. Not that Square Enix would ever do that, because, yeah, they don't like
that's why I acknowledging said, their community. Put a localization team on it.
Yeah.
Good old Japanese publishers.
Yeah. So Final Fantasy 14, 4.1 is a thing.
The Legend Returns is the official name.
Yeah.
I like how they're packaging this. It's an Ivalis story arc, Final Fantasy Tactics. You've got Ramza and Delita right there on the key art.
Uh-huh.
The way they're packaging this is that in the world of Final Fantasy XIV, the War of the Lions is an old Garlean fairy tale.
Yep.
So, however, that's going to lead into the third expansion. Obviously, it's a little early to be talking about that, but eventually, this game has to land in Garlemald.
Yep.
And when you're introducing something as a part of Garlean lore, I think that's kind of a good starting point. So I don't know what Naoki Yoshida or Yasumi Matsuno, who has joined the team for this story arc, have in mind, but this is going to be interesting, to say the least.
Yeah,
because I mean it's a cold turkey change of direction from the story arc that was in Stormblood, which was pretty self-contained. Obviously, there's going to be fallout from that down the road, but I don't know if this is going to be a filler arc or what. But
I think it's a groundwork arc.
Yeah, that's kind of the impression I'm getting. The way Yoshida talked at the at what they call the live letter, which is it's how Yoshida addresses the fans with new developments. And there's going to be another one in 2 weeks, apparently, talking about the deeper details of 4.1, which will be coming out in the beginning of October, I think he said. So I'm really excited about this. I want to see where they're going with it. But we knew that there was a Final Fantasy Tactics-themed raid coming for quite a while. But the fact that they're dedicating an entire patch to it means there's going to be some story content.
Yep.
So, really interested in seeing how this shakes out.
Yeah, so keep an eye on that. And, I want to give a little congratulations to Daigo Umehara, who has engaged beast mode again.
Yes.
three CPT wins in just under a month. That's apparently he wasn't happy about not placing at Evo and then got angry, and you don't make Daigo angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Angry Daigo is best Daigo. We've seen this many, many times in the past. He said going into Evo that he had kind of identified the problems that were holding him back as a Street Fighter V player and had worked on correcting them.
Mission accomplished.
You can't argue with results.
Yep.
So, congratulations to Daigo, and I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing what will turn out to be the Year of the Beast by the time Capcom Cup rolls around.
Yeah.
Because
three
Pro Tour wins in just over a month is not an easy thing to do for the best of players.
Yeah.
So, let's see if he can keep this rolling. I hope he does.
Yeah. In other fighting news, X-Cura, a famous data miner, has been, digging in through the Street Fighter V code and has found what looks like a V2 prototype character for Ryu.
Yeah, so the backstory on this is that with all the rumors about what Super Street Fighter V or whatever it ends up being includes is... they want to get like a choose your own V system type of thing in there where you can pick between separate loadouts of V skill, V trigger, things like that. All indications are that for Ryu, that V trigger looks like it's in the code to some degree right now. They found animations for it. And unsurprisingly, the alternative V trigger for him is going to be Satsui no Hado.
Yeah, of course.
So, which makes perfect sense. I don't know, like all signs are pointing to a repackaging of the game, which they really need to do. And there have been some pretty good articles written about this in recent months. Like if they can get all the stuff that was missing from the original release done and just kind of make it a free update for existing owners and a repackaging of the game for potential new buyers, and then include seasons 1 and 2 character passes.
Yeah, just put it all together, you know, KI Ultra Edition style.
Yeah, and if they do that, there's another good reason for it. If they put out a packaged product called Super Street Fighter V with all that content included, new Metacritic scores.
Yeah, there's that too.
So they get a do-over on the reviews, and honestly, you know, I've talked about what a good place Street Fighter V is in already at this point. We still got to see what Zeku brings to the table when he comes out in a couple months. Minot is fantastic and is really hopefully the start of addressing one of Daigo's complaints about Street Fighter V, is that it's really hard for players to express themselves through their play style compared to other Street Fighter games. Minot doesn't have that problem. So maybe we're going to start seeing something to that effect with Zeku and, you know, getting a clean slate with another major upgrade, because Season 2 was kind of a major upgrade as well. You had some new moves thrown in. Everything got retooled. It really was like a Champion Edition update of sorts. And so if they do something like that again, and this time package it and sell it as a new product, throw in and sort of choose your own V system mechanic, which doesn't go against anything Street Fighter traditionally has liked to do anyway.
Yeah.
I think they could have a winner on their hands, and I'm really going to be paying attention to the data mining that comes up from here because... another thing they found was a red EX flicker. So you know when somebody does an EX move, they flicker yellow while they're doing the move?
Yeah.
I don't think that's what it is, actually. I don't think it's EX. I think it's going to be an alternative V-trigger animation. So I've got the videos and stuff linked in the show notes, but yeah, they're finding interesting stuff embedded in the code, and it's almost like Capcom is doing this to tease things now because they know that people are data mining it.
Probably.
And they know that we know about the rest of Season 2 and that the Season 2 leaks kind of came alongside Season 3 leaks.
Yeah.
That have more or less been corroborated. And so all these signs are pointing in the same direction. Hopefully they can turn that into some momentum and, you know, it's a way to get people hype without actually leaving them hanging.
Yeah. Should probably also talk a little bit about the arcade mode, because I have, we've seen kind of images of what that might be, and it's starting to point in the direction of, like, the VF4 Evo type of arcade mode.
Which fits Capcom's model for this game.
Yeah.
You know, here are AIs based on real players that we can harvest from CFN on a daily basis if we want.
Yeah.
So here is a simulation of what you will find. Let's get you into the community and start taking part in this grand concept that we've built.
Yep.
You know, I'd said from the beginning that if they were going to include an arcade mode in the game, it would be done in such a way to push people toward the community.
Yeah.
This does that.
Yeah. And it would do it without outright forcing them in there.
Yeah.
That's the thing. If you wanted to, you can play against ghosts. You have names associated with them, so you could actually build a familiarity to them. Then eventually, you know, if you feel like, well, okay, I'll jump online and maybe I'll see some of these people, you know.
Yep. And sure enough, if it's all based on CFN, and you could base it on player rankings even, like, they have a very good ranking system included.
Yeah.
It's win-win. Yep. And, you know, at the same time, it accomplishes this without spoon-feeding players an almost passive AI that, you know, it'll ramp up the difficulty beyond what single-player Street Fighter players are used to.
Yeah.
So at the same time, you're still going to be forcing players to improve, even if they don't get involved in the community. And that improvement will hopefully build the confidence to take that step. And that'll bring in, hopefully, more players, because that's the end goal of all this.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic way to go about it, and I'm really hoping that that's what it comes to.
Yeah. Also expect an announcement from Capcom dropping the PS Plus requirement for online. Because MK10 already does this.
Do you think that WB had to money hat Sony to do that, though?
Oh, yeah, they definitely did. I mean, it's something, well, technically it is something a developer can turn on and off if they want to. But, you know, you do have to go through Sony channels to do it. So I'm guessing it's not one of those things.
They probably aren't going
to
do that for free.
Yeah, they're not going to do it for free. But, you know, this is Capcom and this is Street Fighter.
And it is Sony's investment.
Yeah, and it is Sony's investment, and it kind of, you know, would benefit everybody in the end. So, yeah, they might not sell as many PS Plus subscriptions, but it would build a community, and, you know, so it probably would be a better thing. Because, you know, free-to-play games don't require online subscriptions, so take that as you will. So, moving on, we got, this week was the launch of Sonic Mania on the PC, and it turned into a clusterfuck.
Yep.
So we first found out. You had one job, Sega. Just one job, and you managed to fuck this one up. They released the game with the much reviled Denuvo DRM in place. A lot of people do not want to buy games that have this in there. Because, well, it's kind of, to a lot of people, it's akin to malware. They didn't want it. And it's in there. It's blocking them from using the game that they purchased in the ways that they want to. And it also has, you know, it also has documented performance problems on the PC. It's also not very secure as it gets cracked. The case in point would be Rhyme, who said, yeah, if it gets cracked, we'll remove it. 5 days later, it was cracked. So, yeah, this, I don't know why Sega decided to go with this, but they did. But it got worse, because people found out that they couldn't play offline. Yeah, they had to, a game that doesn't really have any online content was forced to have an always online internet connection. Okay.
Well, shit.
That's bullshit. Yes.
You would think the PC version would be the definitive one.
You think so? But
these developers?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, because
this doesn't sound like a development level decision.
No, this was corporate sticking their head in where it doesn't belong.
Yeah. But that being said, I think it will correct itself very quickly.
Oh, the offline thing has
already
been
fixed.
Well,
no, I just mean the whole thing.
Yeah.
I think the community is large enough and vocal enough that Sega's going to be forced to correct it.
Yeah.
And as black eyes go, I mean, we're still comparing this to Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this is something that will pass.
Yeah, this will pass. Sega can recover from this one. Sonic Mania is still a really good game, even if, it is encumbered with DRM right now. What had people upset was the fact that if they pre-ordered, 2 weeks ago, and they didn't want that de novo DRM, which Sega didn't bother to document on their store page, which is actually illegal, they could get a refund because they got a gifted copy of Sonic 1, which made that the point of purchase. So, yeah, it's people are wondering if Sega did that deliberately. We don't know. It just seems to me like a bit of a mess.
It's not a good look.
No, it's not a good look. It looks like a breakdown in communication. But, yeah, I think they could still recover from this.
Oh, yeah.
Sonic Mania is still a great game. I think once it gets cracked and de novo gets removed, which will probably happen in the next week, that should be all good. So
yeah, that online stuff sounds like the mess that was Sega Forever on mobile. We had to be online to save, even though if I was playing Phantasy Star 2, like the only way I could save offline is if I knew where the save points were in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're playing on a mobile game, you're generally playing during like breaks or downtime. You don't have time to sit there and fuck around trying to figure out where you're going to save in a game that you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
You'd have to pay like the $3 to remove ads to actually save.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you said it's fully playable offline. Keep sitting here requiring people to watch video ads to save.
Yeah. Did they ever fix it?
I don't know. I haven't checked. I pretty much stopped bothering. Yeah. That and it plays like the Sega ring chime when you start it up. It's like, that's another fucking stupid thing mobile games do.
But yeah. So let's get on to our meaty discussion of the day, or at least one of them. This week we saw the launch of Bethesda's Creators Club for Fallout 4. The Skyrim version is coming out later this fall.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about as messed up as you think it is.
Yep, it's paying for mods.
Yeah, it's paying for mods, which in the idea of which doesn't alarm me much, as long as the mods themselves are kind of worth paying for. In this case, not so much.
Yeah.
What you've got right now are basically just skins and furniture and very unsubstantial items that you really don't really help your game much.
Mm-hmm.
Did I mention horsepower armor?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of their big featured items is horsepower armor. God damn it, Bethesda.
Yeah. Well, they got what they wanted.
Well, they did get what they wanted. I don't think it's going to have legs because of how the system they've put together works. At least the way it works right now. Basically, modders who submit their mods get a flat rate. They negotiate an amount. That's what they get. They don't see any money on sales, which is a about as... in one way, if your mod, if you know your mod is not going to get a lot of downloads, this might actually be a good thing for you. But
yeah, because then
one
you can
those...
leave Bethesda for whatever.
Yeah, which I get a feeling that some of these modders are already doing. So there's that. And then they use a credit system, which comes out to about 51 cents per credit, essentially. So it's 750 credits is $7.99. So, and the skins are typically 100 credits or more. Pip-Boy skins are 50 credits for some reason. I don't why you would even need a Pip-Boy skin is beyond me, but it's like supposed to look crappy and old and used. It's, that's just how that Pip-Boy is supposed to be. Yeah, you don't need to put a Hello Kitty skin on your Pip-Boy. But you can. Anyways. Oh, yeah, and did I mention that the one of the things I was really hoping for was, you know, some more story content and things like that? I don't think that's going to happen, because those things tend to require that they load in a very specific order. And the Creators Club, as it works right now, loads all the mods alphabetically. That's not good. Because it means that if your mod has to load a certain component first, it can't do that. So then your mod just goes bleh, and breaks your game and could corrupt your save game. And then everybody is unhappy. So much for making sure all your mods work. Yeah. Stupid ZeniMax and their crap thing. Yeah. So I'll put the question out to everybody here. Does paid mods have a chance of actually working if it weren't being done in a ham-fisted, stupid way like this?
Well, if it wasn't overseen by imbeciles, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I'm not even a fan of mods, but I could come up with a better system than this in one day.
Yeah. Yeah, you really could. And... oh yeah, did I mention that when you install this update for the mods and you load the game, it actually preloads all of the mod files onto your computer?
Jesus Christ!
So all you need to unlock them is it's basically just an info file.
So it's ransomware,
which you could write yourself on the PC.
Oh, Bethesda.
So they gave you all the files. It's like, okay, well, I know how to write these info files. I'll just have them all. Since they're, you know, files that are already on my computer that were put there without my permission, I'm not breaking any laws in accessing them.
So basically what Bethesda's really doing is just setting up a sort of spoon feed for pay mechanic for people who don't know how to set up their own mods.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, the Sid Alpha was calling them contracted microtransactions, and I think that's a pretty good way of doing it. I mean, I'm not going to consider this a mini DLC as Bethesda calls it, or mods, because to me, a mod is something more substantial than a skin.
Yeah.
So I don't really see it at that. That's where we're at right now.
I don't know. I mean, I have no words. It's just bizarre. I mean, like, mods are something that have pretty much made Bethesda what they are today, and they just completely threw it out the window. So I don't know.
Now, there's one part of this that I very much agree with, and that's the curation. Because that's one thing that's kind of turned me off of mods in the past, is that there's not really any curation going on. It's just anyone can make anything and sift through all the garbage to find the stuff that's worth using it. No. let's make a service out of it and keep things to exclusively works of quality. So that's one thing I'm completely on board with, but if that curation process rules out anything truly substantial, then it's pointless.
Yeah. And I think right now it's Well, it is basically pointless because the technicalities and in the implementation of the system really prevent anybody from doing any of those really, you know, fantastically complex mods like we've seen for Skyrim on the PC, like Skywind, which was basically an entirely new area. And it's basically Morrowind inside of Skyrim. So just point
that basically
out there.
So they basically took Morrowind and fixed it.
Yeah. And just plopped it into Skyrim with
See, now that is a good thing.
Yeah.
I could get on board with that.
Yeah. And the system Bethesda has right now, you couldn't do that.
So now this begs another question. Has Bethesda set it up in such a way so that any and all mods have to go through this creation club? Or can you sideload stuff?
You can still sideload stuff.
Okay.
So they haven't shut that off. But
so they don't quite have what they want yet.
They don't quite have what they want yet. And part of me thinks that Bethesda deliberately did it this way so this system would fail. Just to appease their, you know, masters at ZeniMax, and basically go, see, we tried and people didn't like it. And then they take it out a year later.
Possible.
Yeah, I mean,
I could see there being that kind of philosophical difference going on within the company.
Yeah.
You could easily convince me of that.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the mod menu on the PS4 version of Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
There are God mode versions of the paid mods, mod suits at least. So you buy those, and then you can get the mod that makes them. It's like this Chinese stealth armor. It's 999 armor, 100 resistance, all damage types, weight zero. So it's just the ultimate version of these things.
Yeah.
But you have to buy them to have it.
Yeah.
Also, kinda. One of the top, let's see, where is it? Most popular today? Or no? Highest rated, it's like a busty mod. That's exactly what you think.
Of course.
Because of course it is.
That's what it says on the tin.
Yep. Yeah, so, and by the way, for those armors and stuff are actually available on the PC without having to pay for them, so.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure people will make the legally distinctive, but mostly the same versions of those things.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, so that's where we're at with Bethesda's Creation Club right now.
Well, there's
it's possible.
They're sure setting up a nice shit show to show ZeniMax.
Oh, yeah. And, stay tuned for this launching in Skyrim Special Edition, because, that's going to be a real shit show if it doesn't improve dramatically from now to then. So,
wow.
Yeah, keep your eye out on that. So let's wrap up with game preservation. This is a topic that I think a lot of us are, you know, fond of, because most of us are retro gamers in some way.
Yeah.
Most of us like to see these games preserved for future generations. So we should probably, you know, spend a little time talking about our thoughts on this. And we'll start with where everybody has basically started at one point, and that was piracy. I'm sure everybody here has done it. I know I have. Back in school, I carried around books of floppy disks, traded them with my friends, totally did that. A lot of the times, the games I was downloading and putting on floppies, I never actually played. You should point that out. So, yeah, it was that. But what piracy really is, for a lot of people, is a way to get games that they never would have had or even had the impetus to try it before. Free promotion is one thing, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that the first time I ever saw Final Fantasy III, the real Final Fantasy III, running in English on a PC, I was sold.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Eventually, you know, you grow up and then these, you don't feel like pirating games anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that has been that we've had alternatives to doing that. I mean, yep. You know, Steam has made it so that you really don't really need to, because you just got to wait for a sale, and then you can pick up the game you were looking for like $4. So, and then never play that either. So there's that.
Also, shout out to Virtual Console, because they made so many classic games available through that service.
Yeah, Virtual Console is great on the Switch. Oh, wait.
It's great on the Wii. It's okay on the Super NES, or on the... It's okay on the Wii U.
Yeah.
Well, you still got the Wii version of it on there. It's kind of like ordering off the secret menu.
Yeah.
But
if you had to go into a building hidden inside the pizza shop.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I want to order the burgers.
That's where they keep the good stuff.
Yeah.
But it's in this door that you kind of have to knock on 3 times in the right rhythm.
Yeah.
Or else they just tell you to fuck off.
Yeah. So what do you guys have to say about companies that, like, are so afraid of piracy, they lock their games down so much that at some point they no longer become usable because that DRM system just goes away?
They're just taking away any incentive to buy those games because, you know, when I buy a game, I buy it.
Yep.
And what I mean by that is I expect to be able to play it now. I expect to be able to play it in 5 years. I expect to be able to play it in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that might mitigate my ability to do that, as far as I'm concerned, is a reason not to buy.
Mm. Yeah.
And this is pretty much the case for absolutely any online game. You know, when Blizzard especially, because that's pretty much all they do. Yeah, you're not going to really be able to play, you know, the PC version of Diablo 3 or Overwatch or, hell, World of Warcraft. If they turn those servers off, you've basically got an unusable blob of code on your system that you can't do anything with.
And a coffee coaster.
Yeah. If you bought the disc, yeah.
I also think that piracy is a damn good incentive for certain re-releases.
Mm-hmm.
Final Fantasy Origins being a good case. Final Fantasy III on the DS and all of the subsequent ports of that version that came out. I don't think that would have happened if people weren't pirating Final Fantasy III translated into English on the NES.
Mm-hmm.
Star Fox 2, I think, is another case. Didn't we call that one?
Oh, yeah.
On the show before when, like, the ROMs were out there already, we were saying, don't be surprised if Nintendo finds a way to get this game out there. Lo and behold.
Yeah.
This is their way of making money on it. They're not making as much as they could because they aren't making enough of the classic edition, and what's that going to lead to? More piracy.
More piracy when people dump the ROM off of that and put it on the internet. So, yeah, great job there, Nintendo.
So I think that's kind of a correction.
Yeah.
It forces corrections, like games that need to be available in a certain market. If it gets pirated enough, it'll be on the radar.
Yeah.
Games that didn't come out at all because they weren't finished, or just because, you know, in Star Fox 2 was a weird case, but just because the publisher did not deign to release it,
mm-hmm.
here are some ROMs.
Yep.
We'd love to give you our money, but you're not letting us.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then they're recreating the problem with supply. So
mm-hmm.
whatever that's about.
Yeah.
But, you know, piracy is the great corrector of all that.
Yeah. Yeah, piracy is what happens when you don't give people the opportunity to pay you.
Yeah. When supply does not match demand, piracy will fill in the gaps every time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, did you guys hear about Darkwood? And that whole situation that blew up a couple of weeks back?
I have not.
So, this indie game called Darkwood. As a lot of indie developers do, they get requests for review codes from various publications.
Uh-huh.
Well, they also get a lot of scams requests.
Yeah.
And at one point, and they could no longer tell the legit ones from the scam ones. So basically what they ended up doing was releasing a torrent, a pirated torrent of their own game, free and clear.
Oh, yeah.
With the message that said, okay, if you can't afford the game, don't buy it from key sites. We would rather you G2A, pirated we're looking it at you. From us. Yes, we're looking at you, G2A. Don't buy it from key sites. We would rather that you pirated it from us and played it. And if you like it and you can eventually afford it, go ahead and kick us a few bucks. So that's a really good way of handling it.
Yes.
I find. Yeah. So anyways. Then it brings us to emulation, which is always a bad word for big corporations, unless they're the ones doing it.
Yeah. The emulation is literally the only reason how I've been able to play games like Snatcher and Police Knights.
Yeah.
Those are, you know, those games by Hideo Kojima, you know, those, you know, he's one of the legendary developers now, and those were some of the games that he made that first made him famous. But because of the way that, you know, the original Snatcher was handled when it came over, they only released it on the Sega CD. Mm-hmm. And Police Knots never came here, period.
Yeah.
Literally the only way I've been able to play those games. So
yeah. So, and yeah, if you go on Nintendo's site and they talk about emulation, they flat out say it's illegal. But the SNES Classic and NES Classic and Virtual Console, and that's all emulation.
Yep.
So, you know, I think there's a real double standard as far as that goes. You know, for it's illegal for people to use it on their own, but it's not for corporations to charge you for it. Oftentimes when they're using the very same software and ROMs, you know. I just think there's a correction that needs to happen there, and I think the SNES Classic is probably going to be it.
Mm.
You're going to see a lot of people getting into, you know, emulation boxes and stuff as a result of not being able to afford. Well, yeah, I'm actually going to say afford, because
I've been saying that RetroPies are going to become a much bigger thing now because of the Super NES Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I said that last week.
So, yeah. So what are your thoughts on all these guys? Nothing?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, what more can we say than go fuck yourself, Nintendo?
Yeah, it always seems to devolve to that, but they really are the biggest abuser, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's Lee told us last week, this isn't anything new for Nintendo. This has been their business model for over 20 years.
Hmm.
I mean, my mom got me, Super Mario 3 when, you know, for my 6th birthday. And, yeah, she had to deal with the same shit.
Yeah, it was almost impossible to find when it first came out.
Yeah.
Hmm. But, yeah. And I guess, finally, we'll have to talk about preservation itself, because there's a lot of efforts going on in this regard.
And honestly, that's the end game to all this.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, these are classic works. These are part of our culture. They should be preserved, you know. We've lost a lot of classic films and television shows that we'll never see again because nobody bothered to save those things.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame that that may happen to some games. You know, already it's like, you know, The Matrix Online, you can't really play that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody did try to reverse engineer the servers and eventually gave up, but yeah. So there was that. But you got the Video Game Museum popping up there, being headed by Frank Cifaldi. There's a whole lot of collectors out there on YouTube and other places who are doing their best to try to find basically trolling auction sites, flea markets, everything, to try to find some of these long-lost gems. And this year alone, we've actually had a lot of very interesting stuff surface. Just last week, a NES prototype for SimCity was discovered in Seattle, of course, because that's where Nintendo is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be...
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on with that game. I'm surprised they even tried getting it working on an NES.
Yeah, and they did, and it was pretty much playable. So, yeah,
Did it work as completely as the Super NES game?
From what I can see of it, yeah.
Wow.
The ROM hasn't been dumped yet, but I don't imagine that's going to take very long. Mm. It'll probably show up sooner or later. Yeah. So there's that going on, and...
I mean, there's a lot of things going on with that game that are really subtle, but if you really stop and think about it, you wouldn't think the NES should be able to handle it.
Yeah. Well...
There's a lot of math going on all at once. There's... Oh.
Yeah, there's a lot of math going on. But remember that the NES has the same processor as a C64, and it was available on that. So, yeah, even though...
That's easy to forget, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even though the game doesn't look quite as good as the C64 version, it still looks like a competent version of SimCity. So,
wow.
Expect that.
That's impressive, I have to say.
Yep. And then, of course, we have backwards compatibility, which is something that a lot of companies are really not too keen on.
Once again, the topic of protecting our investment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most of us don't get rid of our older consoles. We kind of keep them around until they, eventually break, because that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do we do? Yeah, then we try to play our games on the newer consoles, and oftentimes we don't work.
No.
And then what do we do?
Then we pirate them.
Yeah.
And play them on emulation. Yeah, so we have, Sony, we've talked about, because they seem to be flat out against doing any kind of backwards compatibility on the PS4 that they can't charge you for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. Cause...
Now, let me just say this about that particular subject. I would not mind paying for all these games again if they did it the way they did the PS2 games on there, the trophies and everything and the touching up. But they have to do it at a much higher volume than they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
They can't just drop a game or two every month and call it good. They have to open the floodgates.
Yeah.
And they're leaving a lot of money on the table by not doing that.
Yeah. There's also the complete absence of PS1, which you'd think the PS4 would be able to handle just fine, but nope. They could do that via emulation. Hell, I mean, they bought Virtual PC. No, Virtual PC. Crap, what was it? Virtual Game Station to basically get them out of business. And I think the guy that... the guy that wrote Bleem, I think, still works for Sony. So he's very familiar with the PlayStation architecture. You can probably get something.
And what the hell do they have him doing?
I don't know. So he's obviously not doing backwards compatibility stuff.
Are they just paying him to not make emulators?
Not emulate?
Yeah.
It's possible.
Maybe they are that petty.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised. Then Nintendo is, well, I don't know what, I don't even think they know what they're doing as far as backwards compatibility goes on the Switch. You'd think they would have had the Virtual Console available by now. It shouldn't be that hard.
Mm.
Yeah.
But what are they waiting for?
Well, from what we've been hearing, they're not just going to dump the games straight up like they have been on the Wii and Wii U. The concept for Virtual Console on the Switch is going to involve remixing the games.
Oh.
Which is interesting and kind of scary, but at the same time I'm open to it because I would love to have new ways to experience some of these classic games. Mm. And there's already a scene for it in some ways. If you look at, Link to the Past randomizers,
yeah.
I have some friends who do that. some of that shit's off the wall, and if Nintendo found a way to get in on that and, you know, maybe take it to another level entirely, I think that could be a good thing. Maybe create some outright new content for these games. A Link to the Past with a new set of dungeons is really the Zelda game I've wanted them to make all these years.
Yeah.
So that would get me in. So it'll be interesting to see what Nintendo does with it. They also wanted to have things like online play for games that were on systems that just predated online play.
At least I can say for a fact that as far as backwards compatibility goes, I think every future system really should play stuff from the past.
Yes.
Microsoft is setting themselves up to be able to do that really well.
I still think it's strange that Microsoft has the most reverence toward their legacy as a platform holder than any of the big three.
Yeah.
When they have less legacy overall to protect. And I don't say that to devalue it. I do think the Xbox brand has a legacy worth protecting. But I just think it's interesting that they're the ones out of all the big three who understand and acknowledge that.
Yeah.
But I think more than anything, what platform holders need to be conscious of and really write into their policies as, you know, write into their philosophies as platform holders, don't ever force your consumers to take their digital rights into their own hands.
Yeah.
Because they will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I would love a platform, hardware or software or otherwise, that would basically just let me buy and play any game ever made. You know, whether it's Atari 2600 or, you know, BBC Micro or Acorn Electron or whatever, what have you, I should just be able to go there, pay a few bucks, download the game, and be able to enjoy it. That would be something that could be done on PC.
Yeah.
You could probably do it on any platform. It just has to have somebody that provides it.
Yeah.
Like, who owns
to this on a Sound Off video a long time ago, where I said we could be approaching a situation where platform holders might have to make non-proprietary ROMs available for sale just to continue making money off of them. And that might be the ideal situation in the long run.
Yeah.
Like, imagine if it became so rampant that Nintendo had no choice but to open a digital store where you can buy account-based NES ROMs or SFC ROMs, things like that.
Yeah, that would be nice, but that would also require Nintendo to actually know what they're doing as far as online accounts go.
Yeah, which they're working on.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the beginnings of it, but they are working on it.
Yeah.
Now the situation just needs to reach such a point, and Star Fox 2 may be the tipping point where it comes to that, because it would allow them to release games at a much faster pace than Virtual Console allowed them to, because there's no porting going on whatsoever. And then, here's the vault. here are ROMs. We'll let you pay for them, but please stop pirating our shit.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're destined for, because it's the only logical solution, especially for the older legacy platforms I can think of.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to get people to accept a situation where these games are flatly not available.
Yeah. If they're not the ones who are providing the service, someone else will, and, you know, they're...
they're clearly not happy with that status quo.
Mm-hmm.
No, so
what else to do?
Yeah, you know, get in on it. Be the provider. So, anyways.
Yeah, like right now on PS4 and Xbox One, I don't know if Steam has it, but you got a whole host of arcade games that Hamster's brought over, as well as Neo Geo stuff. SNK has also brought their own Neo Geo stuff. There's mm-hmm. the Atari collection that Atari did, and you've got like Super Nintendo games on PS4 at least, and some other stuff like that. That shows that it's really kind of up to the people that own those games, those properties, to be willing to exploit the fact that they have them and bring them to mm-hmm. new platforms. And we see most of the time they don't really give a shit.
No.
Especially when you see like Square Enix, even with like the PS1 classics last gen, they had on the Japan PSN, they had tons of their classics. But bringing some of that stuff over to North America or Europe, they said, fuck it.
It was like pulling teeth.
Yeah, it's like, Einhander, that's a game that a lot of people like. That more people should see now, and they just left it in Japan.
Yeah,
you have to go get a Japanese PSN credit card to go get that, as well as the Japanese account and all that, and be able to find your way through the Japanese to go get it. And they've also done that as far as like the PSP versions of Final Fantasy 1 and 2 that are superior to the PS1 versions. They just left, they allowed those to release on PSN in Europe, but not over here because we already had the PS1 collection.
Yeah.
And they're like, we don't need to double up. Like, are you Square Enix?
Yeah.
You don't want to double up the money?
Yeah. And then they did double up with the PS1 classic of Final Fantasy VII, and then the PS4 release that came out later. So, yeah.
It's like, you guys are almost the kings of exploiting. Capcom would be probably the number one because they've found more ways to sell us more Mega Man games. I wouldn't be surprised if that keeps going for the X games as well as any other that's out there.
I hope so.
Like, they have most of the GBA games, the Pokemon-like ones that are on the Wii U now.
Mm.
So it's like, here's a bunch of games that are kind of all the same. And...
No, I hope Capcom has a lot of success with that, because I really believe that those first three X titles are like the Bible of action platformers. If you're going to make an action platformer in 2D, this is how you do it. These three games right here.
Yeah.
And so, I hope it comes to that.
And we can look at like EA is really bad about exploiting their past games.
Mm.
Like, look at their PS2 era stuff, like where's Burnout 3, Burnout Revenge. Those should be on modern platforms so people could play them.
Yeah.
The Need for Speed stuff. Obviously, the sports and movie stuff is not going to be easily brought back in any way because
shelf life.
Yeah. But there's tons of other stuff they have out there that would be fun to play, like Freedom Fighters. People would love to be able to play that again and see if the memory still holds up for the gameplay. Black. Yeah, that would be cool to see, like, one of the first, at least on console, like, very physics-y, effects-heavy games that we saw where it was all about just blowing shit up.
Yeah.
There's a lot that some of these publishers could do, and some of the best ones, obviously, like Capcom, Nordic Games has done a good job of exploiting a lot of the older THQ stuff. As they still keep having games that are coming back. Like Locke's Quest was one that just came out a couple of months ago. There's and a bunch of others. It's a lot of these publishers don't really give a shit, but a couple do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a shame, especially when you see people online are like, no more remasters. We don't want any more remasters. Like, you don't buy them if you don't want them. That's the whole thing.
Nobody's putting a gun to their heads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they should be available.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you also have companies like Bethesda, who at least id Software in particular, who go out of their way to make their games as backwards compatible as possible by releasing the source code.
Yeah, but then you get the weird situations like the Doom 3 collection thing where they delisted, I think, the original version of Doom 3 that was on Steam.
Yeah.
And then the new version was some ways inferior to that. Not as able to, not necessarily directly mod it, but modify the experience the way you should be able to have like the old version, but also the new stuff. Yeah. Like the way that you can do with like the Final Fantasy VII thing where you can play it at the original like battle speed and all that, or you can speed it up so you're running around not wasting a ton of your time for some of the parts of that game that are slow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the end, I just think, we really need to have these games available.
Yes.
These companies aren't going to make them available, somebody else will. So that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Speaking of making games available, you want a $100 version of Street Fighter 2 for the SNES?
They really picked the wrong title to do this with.
World Warrior for $100.
$100.
Which, if you adjust it for inflation, is probably a bargain compared to what it cost on August 16th, 1992, when it released.
But
which I'm thinking was like around $80
bank account and spending $79.99 on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And special carts.
Yeah, the two different cart colors. They're doing 4,500 of them are going to be red, and then 1,000 I think are going to be green, blank,
glow in the dark green.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
So if you want,
and they're
that's
not marked
as hell, glow in the dark green.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're not marked either, so
that's
it's
good.
Like you buy one of these editions, you don't know what you're going to get. Yeah, that's going to be kind of fun. I'm tempted, but $100 is a lot for a game I could go to the thrift store and get for $4.
Yeah.
Or
now, if they'd done this with Hyper Fighting,
yeah, that would have been something different.
Yeah,
that would have been the better version to do. New challengers, not so much.
Not so much.
SNES, it was really Hyper Fighting. That's the one people remember the most.
Because for some reason they decided not to port Super Turbo.
Yeah, for some reason.
Yeah. But I would not be surprised if they do more of this, if this does well.
Oh, I hope they do more of this. I know. There's 5,500. They're going to sell out. Even at $100, for the new artwork, the nice packaging.
It's not even new artwork, is it?
No. Nope.
It's recreation of the original artwork, but
they embossed. Drew it?
Yeah. It's all going to be, glossy, embossed. There's going to be some surprise stuff in the package too, so
no, that's the exact same artwork.
Yeah,
no platform markings on it though.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
so you get full frame
because
art.
Nintendo isn't giving out production slots for Super NES games these days.
No. Yeah, these are all repro carts, which is interesting to see a big publisher sort of supporting that aftermarket kind of thing. There is a nice warning on the page. Use of the reproduction game cartridge on the SNES gaming hardware may cause the SNES console to overheat or catch fire.
I don't think so.
The SNES hardware.
Well, no, that was the rumor back then because Street Fighter II was the first 16 meg SNES title, and it did. And Super NESs, especially those early models, did have a tendency to heat up really bad. So the rumor was, if you played it for like 6 hours, it would cause your system to catch fire, which was flatly false.
Yeah, I can confirm that it was flatly false.
Mm-hmm.
But they do say make sure there is fire extinguisher equipment nearby, which is...
Yeah, I think they're just having fun with it now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think that's really a warning you need to take too seriously.
It's right at the bottom of the page.
Yeah. But, yeah, don't do that.
Like and subscribe to this warning.
Do that. Like the warning. Okay. I can probably do that. But yes, if Capcom is doing this with this, I wonder, you know, what other things you would see being done as official reissues. There are many that I could consider that would warrant a
I still think Hyper Fighting's the one they should have done here.
Yeah. Hyper Fighting would have been, but then that would have pushed it to next year.
Well, no, because they're not celebrating the 30th anniversary of Street Fighter 2 anyway, even though that's the game they should be focused on for anniversary milestones, because heaven help us if we're actually pretending that Street Fighter 1 is a game we're celebrating.
Well, they should have done that. Had it put it in with this. It's like an NES repro card for this.
Yeah, well, that one never came out on the NES.
Hyper Fighting anniversary release, it is the 25th anniversary of it this year.
Yeah, they could do that. They ought to do, Streets of Rage 2 reissue like that would be really nice.
That would be next year, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
25th anniversary?
Yep. I think if this does well, maybe it'll work. We have Dan Run back?
I don't know. Do we?
Yes, we do. All right.
That's great.
So you've been listening to us ramble on for the past 10 minutes and you haven't had a chance to say anything. So,
I know.
Yeah. If you got something to chime in, go ahead.
Give me a moment to gather my thoughts. I was just going to say that, piracy, we've all done it. For me, it was with the SNES 9X or whatever the fuck it was called, because, you know, I didn't grow up with the SNES. The NES, I went to the Sega Genesis, so that's why I've been really late in regards to JRPGs and some of the other Mario games. It's actually one of the reasons why I actually prefer Mario 3 over World. Actually, I actually still do, so...
Well, I prefer Mario 3 over World because it's the mechanically superior game.
I totally agree with that. Yeah, I have no disagreements there. But yeah, you're all right in the sense that, you know, Nintendo is probably the biggest hypocrite in regards to it. One thing that I don't understand, especially with the Virtual Console, is I don't see why they just don't open the floodgates. I don't understand why there's 3 games released per week when, you know, there's hundreds of games in their backlog. If you release 3 games per week, there's no way you're going to be able to let anybody play everything. And that's really the point of the Virtual Console in the first place. And in regards to their plan, their plan moving forward, I don't even know if there is one. Because if you look at the original NES Classic, there really wasn't that much support going into the Virtual Console after that was released. When you have the SNES Classic now, and it has the games that it has, it makes you wonder if it really is even a selling point for Nintendo moving on with the Switch. You have Phil's example of, you know, just making a cart with all the games in it, but Nintendo's at a weird spot where everything they're putting out on the Switch is selling like crazy. And I don't know if it's the case with where you all live now, but I'm starting to see more Switches in the wild. And
I am too.
Like, if you ask me, they're not gonna, you know, announce like games like the Smash 4 Deluxe or a Pokemon until Nintendo is ensured that people are gonna buy those games coming out. And by any indication, you know, the success of games like ARMS and the Rabbids game is just a good jumping off point there. But
We're still waiting on Mario Odyssey, which is coming out in October, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the fact that they're probably going to release a pack-in deal with the Switch, I would not be surprised if you're going to start seeing a package deal with both Switch and a copy of Mario Odyssey. And those are going to sell like freaking crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So
that's one thing Nintendo's always been really good with is the special edition consoles.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd be good with that. I don't know. If all the Zelda 3DSs were any indication, I'm not quite sure that's the right analysis there. But yeah, they've been making them, and they've moved them. So that's the positive thing there. And like, you know, when the Switch was first announced, and we talked about like all their accessories being crazy expensive, people are still fucking buying them. It's totally ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just goes to show if Nintendo's going to make it, people are going to buy it. So there's really no reason for them not to open the floodgates there. Every week I see rumors about the GameCube actual console, but we don't even know what they're going to do with it. So I don't think we're actually going to receive any thoughtful news until maybe spring of next year, once the online becomes a premium thing and they really start to figure that out. But yeah. You know,
Wave Race Blue Storm on the GameCube Virtual Console, that's the day that I pony up for a 256 gig SD card. Say, God damn it, and give them my money.
Yeah.
Do those work on there? I don't even know what memory card.
I thought they went up to 256.
Because I'm pretty sure I have a 128 on mine, but I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, SDXC. I think the Switch will take up to a 256, but no higher than that.
I think the max is 2 terabytes. It just doesn't exist yet.
Yeah. Well,
it's like that's what the format's max can be.
Yeah, format max is, but whether the Switch implemented that standard is another thing.
Well, they're probably not going to implement some sort of max support for that until it exists in a way that people can buy it.
Yeah.
Imagine that'd be a firmware update in the future.
Yeah. So a 256 gig SD card is about $60.
I don't think I officially have any games on my SD card yet. There just hasn't been that much to put on there.
Yeah. Sorry, no. About 100. Yeah, it's about $90 for a 256. 128 is about $60. So.
Yeah, I think I paid $40 for my 128 or whatever it is.
Canadian prices.
Yeah.
I did spend some more time with that. While we're on the subject of Nintendo, I did spend a little more time with that Hori controller that I talked about last week.
Hmm. Yeah.
Great for Mario Kart, terrible for Street Fighter.
No. Well,
that's kind of reverse.
Irritating. It's supposed to be for fighting, but.
Oh, well. Yeah. End of story. Just keep pirating Earthbound until Nintendo gets it.
Yeah.
Honestly,
that's basically what it boils down to. I mean, yeah.
I still think Star Fox 2 is going to be the situation that forces Nintendo's hand on, you know, something.
Yeah, well, it's a situation that they themselves created by botching this system launch. As you know, I don't even think they consider it a system launch. I mean, I think they just consider it a one-off. So. Yeah, it would still be nice if they actually managed to, you know, fulfill demand instead of creating artificial scarcity.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, other than the $100 Street Fighter 2, which is, okay.
I'm really surprised Capcom had the budget for that.
Yeah, well, they're doing it with I Am 8-Bit and these guys.
Ah, okay, yeah, they always do that shit, right.
Yeah, so, yeah, they do good stuff, you know. Their reproductions. I think this is actually the first time they've really done a cartridge reproduction officially. So, you know, for that, it's worth keeping an eye on, because maybe it'll lead to something else. Imagine official reissues of Chrono Trigger.
Oh,
that you could actually buy.
That isn't on the GBA or the 3DS.
Yeah,
the good PS1. Version. The good version.
Yeah. No, the PS1 had catastrophic lag.
Yeah.
That's because they used, I think it was a bad emulator they used on there or something like that.
Yeah. So.
I mean, the DS1 was the PS Vision, the PS version.
No, it
fixed the lag. I think they reprogrammed a lot of it from the ground up.
Yeah.
Hmm. So. So I guess we have a show for today, I suppose.
Yep.
Yeah. So until next week, I want to remind everybody that you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, and your other favorite RSS reader or podcast aggregators. Check us out at smashpad.com. We have reviews and stuff. Some of them are up there now.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, Madden is up. Yakuza Kiwami is up. East 8 will be at some point.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, we got stuff coming up.
And we're going to have a lot more coming. Just to let everybody know, because now that summer is on its way out, we're going to be getting into the holiday season, and now, oh boy, we're...
Yay, give it your discussion.
And then we're just going to be straight swamped, so...
Yep. All of the things coming out all at once.
Yeah.
This is going to be a good game of the year run this year.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, I already have my 8 listed, or my 10 listed, so...
Already.
Just got to get ready for the other releases.
Maybe one or two games in the pipeline that may change my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah. So, with that, I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Reb Victoria.
See you next week.